There's nothing quite as cozy as a warm fire in the wintertime. But that cozy fire is a lot less fun when there's something wrong with the fireplace. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here today. We'll talk about fireplaces, wood fireplaces, and chimney upkeep, the pros and cons of gas fireplaces, maintenance tips, and danger signs. Bill will also answer your questions about the home improvement projects in your life. Send your questions by email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe, and it's chilly out there. A great time to go home this evening and start a fire in your fireplace if everything's working right. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, good morning.
And we are going to talk about fireplaces. We're going to talk about wood fireplaces, chimney upkeep, gas fireplaces, pros and cons.
Maybe. We'll see how it goes.
But we're going to start with a cautionary tale.
Yes, let's
and
hear this.
Catherine Perkins is here in the studio with us. So, Catherine, this let's go back to a chilly day last spring.
Oh, yes. Hyrule Perkins.
It was it was Memorial Day weekend. And as you recall, it was very cold and very rainy for Memorial Day weekend, and it had really put a damper on a celebration that we were having with some friends who are visiting from Southern Illinois. And I feel like I can say this. I'm from Southern Illinois. Just not as hearty stock there, you know. So we were a little chilly. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to flip on the switch. This is what I love about my gas fireplace. I can flip on the switch and have instant heat. So I flip on the switch, and it does this weird thing. It kind of flames up, and then it just goes out. And I think, well, that's odd. So I'm flipping the switch, you know, because that's going to work. And luckily, my husband was standing in the kitchen. He could see out our sliding glass doors into the backyard. And he says, I see smoke. And so we go running outside, and there are flames coming out of the vent. Yes. So I grabbed the fire extinguisher and put out the fire.
While he was doing what?
He was just... He was looking. He was watching. He was being vigilant with the fire. I will say that. And so I used the fire extinguisher. I put it out. I burned his plants in the process, which he would like me to point out, I'm sure. But the fire goes out then. It turns out that a bird, or several birds actually maybe, had built a nest in that vent into the pipe that, you know, vents the fireplace. So that's my cautionary tale.
All right. So there was a lot of stuff in there.
There was. We cleaned it out this fall, and it was amazing how much debris had been pushed back into that pipe.
And I remember, you know, you listen to the show quite a bit. I think we've mentioned a few times maybe get in there. And of course, that's supposed to be his job because Southern Illinois people, they wouldn't even think about that. But cleaning that vent, I think we've mentioned.
It's pretty important. And I think we just didn't think about it because we had cleaned it out in the fall and, you know, we had used it through the winter and it had been fine. I didn't think it was soon enough for birds to have built something.
Right.
There,
but it had probably just been a month or so that you hadn't turned on because it was nice and warm for a while.
Now, if that'd been a turkey, see, you'd been all set.
True. Your Memorial Day turkey.
Yes, Memorial Day turkey.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for sharing your tale with us.
Yeah.
And Bill,
thanks, Catherine.
Catherine had done the right thing in cleaning out the vent. Do we also need to make sure that we have some mesh or some wire or something over that vent to make sure that birds aren't getting in there?
Yeah, the mesh thing. And it's amazing how many of these gas fireplaces the mesh has fallen off, or you know, in a storm damage they'll fall off, and then you go to a big box store and you can't find one with mesh. And what do I need the mesh for? I just need an end cap. So they'll throw that on there. And the ones on top of fireplaces, wood fireplaces on top of houses, you very seldom see with mesh on them because they get clogged with creosote because they use the wrong wood, and so then they rip them off and just have them open, and then they wonder why they get filled up with critters.
All right, you know. So mesh is pretty important. Let's start talking basics, though. And I actually want to start with gas fireplaces because they are so popular now. When you're thinking about putting a gas fireplace in your home, what do you need to think about?
Well, first of all, you want to think about you really need it because a lot of my friends have put them in like in new homes, And a couple years later, they take them out because they build their house so well that when they fire that thing up, all of a sudden it's 90-some degrees in the living room, and then they're opening up the windows on days like today trying to cool it down. And how many days a year do you really use it? There's really not many – to me, there's really not many positives to having it. And we were just
Of us don't consider it to be a necessity.
No.
Most of us consider it to be a luxury because next to a fire is delightful.
We were talking earlier, you know, you can go on Hulu and get that fireplace image, and you got a 55-inch fireplace on your wall. You know, you put up a hairdryer, give you some heat. It's a lot safer than a gas fireplace.
Okay,
I mean, there's no positives.
Let's say you get past the hurdle. You say, okay, maybe I don't actually need a gas fireplace, but I do really want a gas fireplace.
All right.
How do you make sure it's safe?
Well, the biggest thing is you have to make sure that whoever installs it knows how to put in fireplaces. That some of the gas fireplaces, I remember we ran into a phase where we'd put one into a home that, you know, they'll kind of like a, probably Catherine's, they have one pipe coming in, right, and going out. So it, a lot of them, they'll go out like the side of the house. It probably came outside, didn't it? Okay, great. What happens is if they're not put in correctly is if the two pipes come up, like one of the, like see, the interior pipe comes apart, is the exhaust gases from when you, like they'll have a pilot in them sometimes, is the exhaust gas going out will leak into the air coming in, and then it starves it of oxygen, and then it kind of goes poof, poof, like Catherine's did. Well, there was a lot of instances, it was in the mid-90s where the glass fireplace door, it'd go poof, poof a couple times, and then wham, and then the gas door, the glass door was laying in the middle of your living room because it all of a sudden got enough oxygen. So, you know, just bumping sometimes those pipes, or if they weren't sealed correctly, putting them together. Because really, that's the only, you know, a gas fireplace is pretty simple, really. It's just have that intake and exhaust right there. And so if you mess up on having it installed correctly to the backside of the unit, that's usually what causes the problems. But, you know, still there is, you know, gases. When you burn something, you want to make sure that it exhausts out. So let's say even with that gas furnace, let's say, since yesterday's discussion on meals got me all wound up on the goulash thing, let's say you've got a big range hood. You fire that range hood up, and if you have leaky gaskets on the gas door, you can be pulling those fumes right into the house. And so then it's the exact same thing as, you know, I always put it towards, you know, gas, you know, from a car. You're pulling exhaust gases into your house. And even if you have can lights, that improperly installed can lights in a tall ceiling, there might be enough air leakage going out those can lights and pulling air through that fireplace into the house, even when it's running on a gas one. So it does the same thing with wood, but that's why, to me, you know, I've always kind of wanted to put one in. I like wood stoves, you know, because they're very sealed. And some of the newer fireplace inserts, they're very good. But the older wood fireplaces and some of the gases, you know, gas fireplaces, some of the newer ones are better. So you don't want to go out and say, hey, there's one on sale for $199. Okay. Yeah, that's just what I want to put in the house and
all
have
right,
20
so,
people.
So don't. Don't go on the cheap.
No, you really want to do your research.
And I know Catherine has a carbon monoxide detector in her house. Is that another important element? If you really want one of these things, do you need to monitor?
You want to monitor that. And then, you know, nitrous oxide, there's a lot of gases that come from combustion. And then also there's oxygen deprivation. I mean, is if, you know, you're burning something, you're using up oxygen. And it depends on how tight your house is or that particular room. You know, you may have it in a small room. Let's say everybody's sitting around watching TV and you're in a small room. There's 12 people in the room, maybe 12 by 12. They're just all crammed in watching TV. And then the fireplace is going, well, where's the air coming from for everybody to breathe? They might, you know, all of a sudden a couple people yawn. And most of the time that's from, you know, carbon dioxide. But still, you know, you can see the possibilities. I wish Tom Griner was here. He could explain everything about carbon monoxide there is to know. But there's anytime there's combustion, there's gas, and you know, I mean gas exhaust. So you really want to worry about that.
Right.
And I hate to be a
and the message that I'm hearing from you, Bill, is just say no.
That's me. Yes, yes. But I love wood stoves. I've heated house in the past with a wood stove, but it was a very good. It wasn't, you know, it was a Vermont castings, and it was all you know, EPA certified and everything, but still it had to have air from outside for combustion. Mm-hmm. That's the scary part.
All right. Well, let's move on to wood stoves then, because, you know, a lot of us, not necessarily wood-burning stoves, but wood fireplaces. A lot of houses have wood-burning fireplaces. What do you need to know about the condition of your chimney and everything before you want to build a fire?
Well, you want to have it inspected every year. You know, even if you've only burned maybe a couple fires, you still want to have that inspected because you may end up with the same thing that Catherine had. Maybe something crawled in there, depending on the age. You don't know, you know, if you're just a homeowner, you don't know if it has a stainless steel flue or if it has an older brick flue and water's leaked in and there's bricks loose. You don't know if it has a clay tile flue. Well, did they use the right mortar when they assembled this? That's why you need a professional to come in and really take a look at it and see what's going on. You can do a quick check with a mirror. It's just kind of fun. You know, you do like a small handheld mirror. You can stick your hand into the, you know, the fireplace, and then you can look upwards through the flue and you know, and see if there's anything big or maybe an obstacle in the way. You want to do that. You know, the easiest way to find a chimney sweep is you want to get a hold of let's see, I'm trying to think of what the company is, but you can go to FEMA. They have the U.S. Fire Administration there, and FEMA, they have a list, but the U.S. Fire Administration has a list of certified chimney sweeps. Most of them, you know, we kind of went through that phase when we used to heat houses more with wood. And we learned a lot, and some of those were especially supplying enough combustion air. Let's say a friend of mine has three big fireplaces, and when you turn on, say, even turn on your dryer, you know, where's the air coming from when you turn that dryer on? Or a central vacuum system, you know, a lot of air goes out in a central vacuum. Okay, you've got those two things going, and then a range hood. Where's the air coming for the combustion of the, you know, for the fire? And then where are the, say, you know, some of the, if you use a wood that likes to pop, where do those little embers go? Do you have a sealed door on your wood burning fireplace? Do you have a good gasketed damper? Because when you really look at a wood fireplace, it's at most an energy evening out if you burn it a lot. Otherwise, they're a loser.
Right.
They're really a loser. I mean, you'd have to try to heat your house with it to be a gainer because they consistently lose air up the flue when you're not using it.
Well, we have to take a short break, and I want to talk about fireplace inserts in just a couple of minutes, too. But, of course, we'll also open the phones to your questions at 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're talking home improvement today on Talk of Iowa with our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. This is Talk of Iowa.
Just give me good friends and fireplaces, cold wine and warm embraces, then I'll be satisfied with life. Just look at old Rover dozing by the fire's light. Well, I could swear he's grinning as he dreams away the night. Well, he's just like me, he's got no reason to get uptight. He gets his kicks like I get mine.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. We've been talking about fireplaces so far, but of course, Bill is also here to answer any questions you may have about your home improvement projects, heating, cooling, and otherwise.
And to go back to Dick Van Dyke Chimney Sweep, that's the Chimney Safety Institute of America. That's who has the list of chimney sweeps.
Yeah, I was just telling Bill, the only thing that kept going through my mind was Mary Poppins, and I thought, she's really hard to get a hold of because I have tried. Anyway, you can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can post on our Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. And, all right, I would just forward promote it a couple of seconds ago. I do want to talk about fireplace inserts.
Yes.
And I did a little research about this because the last house we owned had a fireplace that was a tremendous energy suck. Mm-hmm. I mean, it certainly made us a lot colder than it ever made us warm when we used it. But fireplace inserts can make a real difference if you're actually trying to heat your house.
Some of the fireplace inserts are amazing. You know, when you look at a, let's say, a fireplace insert, they usually have – When if you see them at a, you know, like a store on display, they usually have this graph on there and it shows the percentage. And some of those are up there like 90, you know, 80, 90%. I mean, that's getting up there like a furnace. And the ones that are built, they have kind of a double burn and they'll have a fan in them. Some of the, you know, like Vogelzang, you know, there's all kinds of different brands out there. But some of those, you know, you'll put in a, let's say, once you've got the flue warmed up and everything, you put in a load of, let's say, nice dry oak. You know, that may burn for 5, 6, 7 hours on some of these huge Tula Kivi masonry stoves. They'll heat, you know, a small load for a few hours. But if you have a fireplace, doing an insert like that, if you really want to burn wood, that's the way to go. But really look at –
But that's a significant financial investment.
It is. You know, the ones that I've looked at, you know, they're $1,500. Well, you know, you can go to some stores and buy the same thing you think for $399. Well, there's obviously a difference for $1,200. And putting that in isn't just a Joe homeowner kind of thing. You know, you want somebody that actually knows what cements to use, you know, what type of fasteners to use. The something that, you know, you could about imagine somebody just grabbing some screws off a shelf, putting it together. You'll get moisture, and all of a sudden, you know, 2 or 3 years, things are rusted out. But those can, you know, heat, say, 2,000 square feet. But, you know, when they're installed right, and that's why they are expensive. But there again, they also have to have the makeup air. And, you know, there's issues of also with, you know, backdrafting, things like that. That's why you need a professional to help you with something like that. And if you're going to spend $1,500, you want a professional putting it in anyway.
Yes, I do.
Yes, yes.
All right, let's get to the phones. 866-780-9100. Steve is on the line in Calhoun County. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a question. We had a friend a few years ago who bought a gas heater. It was about two feet by 3 feet and about 2 or 3 inches deep.
Right.
He lived on a farm, and it was LP, but it required no electricity and no vent.
Right. Those are scary.
Safe?
Scary? You know, they are – excuse me. They are safe. Maybe the first time you put them on. I mean, they come from the factory. They're tested at the factory, and they don't put off any carbon monoxide or are extremely, extremely low. But they get slightly dirty or they get out of adjustment, and they can be very dangerous very fast. The other thing is you're still burning you're burning something. So all of those you're using up oxygen, and all those combustion gases are there. The only, you know, if you really, really look at the fine print on that, they'll say that, you know, that it has to have windows open, or you know, it has to be in a huge room. If it was my family, I would never do that. Anything that burns combustion, like those old kerosene heaters we had when the energy crisis, that, you know, everybody had one, little rollers.
Mm-hmm.
There again, you're burning the gases, and they're in the house. And if they have no place to go, you know, if somebody tries to seal up the house and seal all the windows, caulk it, and make it airtight. Okay, you're just you know, counting your days then. To me, you know, I would never put that in. I don't think they had really. Have any place other than a big leaky garage, maybe, and then I would still be nervous. I mean, I would still be nervous.
All right, Steve, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Steve,
for your call. Jim is on the line next in Spencer. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, a couple questions. First, on you're saying that most fireplaces are, just not efficient. You're going to lose all this hot air up the chimney.
It depends on the fireplace, right?
Okay, I said most. And so now I'm curious about, like, the old cast iron type stove with a door on it and everything. Would that be an efficient source of heat?
It depends. You know, those old cast iron ones, a lot of times they didn't have very good gasketing.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, I have one that I burn in a garage. And, you know, I swear I'm putting wood in it about every 15 minutes.
Sure.
They'll heat up a small area, but as you get – some of the cast iron ones are extremely efficient when you get up to the, like, say, Vermont castings type quality where everything is fit so well. They have gasketed doors, you know, and those are very efficient.
Right. But,
and that's that, you know, and I'm glad you're bringing this up because there's such a huge range on the efficiency. I was looking at a $699 one the other day, and it was almost off the charts to the bad side on efficiency. Mm-hmm. You know, it looked to me like, hey, this thing's really going to work, but it was just burning and out the flue. It wasn't double gassing. There wasn't any catalytic type equipment in it, you know. And to some, that's why they sometimes scare me.
Well,
and I'm
I
sure
think,
they do you too.
I think your wood source is going to be an issue too, because if it's not well dried or if it's something that has a lot of pitch in it, you know, then you're going to have a whole other set of factors to consider with a you know setup like that.
Yeah, and the other thing is sometimes we do use them for a quick burn, so we do some small. You know, like we might throw in some green, more of a green or wet wood, and then we do smaller fires, and then we don't get a fire big enough to burn that creosote residue out of the flue.
Yeah.
If we do those, you know, it's basically what you're saying is we're, you know, we do a lot of short burns like that, and then we just fill that thing up. And sometimes we don't really realize how long it takes to dry wood properly.
Or what to do if you get a chimney fire.
There you go. Yes, there you go.
Say, I was going to ask you real quick. I got an issue here where I'm trying to snake out a drain. Can you answer any of that for me?
Sure. We'll try to.
Well, you know, I've been working on this thing and, you know, running the snake in and out, back and forth. And, you know, it's really kind of peculiar because there's several things on this line. And then some of them are working fine, but then the ones further upstream are not. And I'm just, you know, it doesn't seem like it's a collapsed pipe because I'm not getting water up through the floor.
Okay.
But I've used, you know, chemicals and I've flushed it and stuff like that, and it just doesn't seem to want to go anywhere. I'm thinking that there's some kind of like a napkin blockage or something. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, on those when we've run into that, and I've run into that on my mom's house too, is they'll bring a camera,
mm-hmm.
and it's, you know, it's well worth it because then they can inspect all the joints. Just last year, I ran into a case where it was a four inch PVC pipe, and the ground had shifted and separated it even, and it was like half the diameter was covered. It was, and in one case they'd used a fern coat, you know, those rubber connectors you tie sometimes drains, temporarily repair drains with. That one had moved almost 2 inches out of line with the adjoining pipe. You know, maybe something has shifted too, but it seems those guys, they don't charge that much for cameras anymore, and then you can see if, like, there maybe a tile has broken or a limb has come in on one of the joints.
All right, Jim. Thanks so much for your call. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here today. He laughs every time I say it. Clearly, he knows what he's talking about. Anyway, you're welcome to join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we've got some email questions. This is from Jerry in Ankeny. Our gas fireplace switches on from a wall switch. It stopped working. Who should I call? Fireplace repair or heating cooling person?
I'd call a heating and cooling person, but it may be an electrician first. Switches, but it, you know, that's a really good question because there's so many different people involved. Some plumbers will work on them, some heating and cooling people work on them, but then maybe it is all in the electrical side, and then the electrician will work on it. You know, in homes there's a lot of these gray areas, so probably the first one to do would be call the person that installed the fireplace or call the manufacturer, and you know, they might have a troubleshooting list for you. Maybe you can bypass that switch at the unit. Some have a push button that you can bypass it. So call the manufacturer first and then see what the steps would be on that. But if you had somebody that put it in, I'd call them first. But it may just be the switch. You know, you never know.
All right. And Paul from Diagonal wants to know if those burnable fireplace logs you see in the store are worthwhile and or safe.
I've never used them because I just can't seem to get them going very good.
Really?
No, I just still like I like starting a fire from small pieces. You know, I they probably work fine, but I don't know how much creosote. There's a lot of wax in them, and I don't know what kind of gases go off. I'm sure they're.
My experience with them is they don't actually put off much heat. It's all about show. I mean, it looks good.
So it's not just for starting.
Start.
Oh, it is for starting, but you didn't just keep chucking them on there, did you?
No. But if you just want a small fire, you want to put that in there, and it's not going to give you any heat, but it will start your fire.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I just kind of like stacking it up like the Cub Scouts. It's kind of a little more fun anyway.
All right. This is from Julie. I have an LP gas fireplace. There's a lot of black buildup on the logs. When we do want to light the fireplace, we have had two instances of the gas seeming to build up before it lights, and then we have a fireball spring from the fireplace. I refuse to use it now. Mm-hmm. An LP company came out and said it's fine, but is it?
It might be to where that pipe is. It might be the kind of – is this a wood? It's a wood?
LP gas.
It's a wood – okay, LP gas. It might be a gas starter. That might be what it is too for a wood fireplace. It's hard.
It's not,
you know,
no, she says there's a lot of black buildup on the artificial logs.
Oh, okay. So. Yeah, I wouldn't run it. I would have a plumber come in and take a look at that or call the manufacturer again. Because there's obviously the combustion isn't – if there's all that buildup on there, the combustion isn't complete. So then we're getting a lot of that, you know, residue left on the logs. And since she brought that up, if some people have a gas starter for a wood burner, you know, they'll have this little tube go in. I can still remember when we started – well, I shouldn't say we. When I stood behind my dad when I built his house back in the 70s, I can remember you just thinking, oh, hey, we'll just crank this on. And he turned that knob on full bore, and he, that match is going chick, and about the fourth one, it goes just like a fireball. I can still remember the flame going around him. I mean, it was hilarious.
Oh,
yeah, his eyebrows looked great too for a couple of weeks. But you want to, you know, really be scared of if you've tried a couple times,
turn
the gas off and walk away. Let it air out. Don't
open a window.
No, yeah, that's almost as bad as gasoline. You know,
all right, good to know. You and I have a different sense of humor, but all right, we knew that. This one's from Amy. She was just wondering if there's a link for the FEMA list of certified chimney sweeps that you mentioned, and I did find that. It's the Chimney Safety Institute of America, and their website is csia.org, csia.org. So you can find that. And let's get back to the phones. Well, that link is up also going to go up on our Facebook page as well if you want to look for that. Mary Kay is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Mary Kay.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Hi. Well, your guest mentioned that sometimes you can have a lot of heat loss through canned lights in the ceiling, I'm assuming. We have a lot of those.
Okay.
And they were installed when we moved in, and I'm interested in finding out if they are, in fact, insulated or if we're losing a lot of air through them. We just don't seem to be able to get our one of our rooms heated. That's where our fireplace is, too. And I'm just wondering if they're sucking air out of the house.
Can you get into the attic and look at them from up above?
Well, it's a two-story house.
Okay.
So I guess on the second floor we could.
On the first floor, I wouldn't worry about it too much. You may be losing some where the floor joists are, where they go to the exterior wall. You may be losing some there, but it's what you're looking at is where they go through the thermal envelope, which would be the insulation. So in the attic on the second floor, if you have some on the second floor, they could be making a difference there. They actually do sell now airtight inserts. I know a couple of the big box stores have them where you can put an insert inside that can if it is not an airtight. What you want to do is pull the bulb out.
Okay.
And you want to look for the letters ATIC, which means airtight insulation contact. If they don't have that on the inside where the bulb would be sitting, you know, a little sticker in there, then it probably is leaking quite a bit. And you can seal it off from the top by making a box of, let's say, drywall or foam over the top of it. But you have to stay 2 to 3 inches away from that light fixture. You can't be any closer than 2 to 3 inches, either on the sides or above. And then there are some companies that sell a pre-made can light cover. I think some of those maybe get a little bit too close to the fixture, just my opinion. So we've built boxes, like say, of 2-inch foam or foil faced foam.
Okay.
But you want to stay a long ways away. The electrical code requires that.
Okay.
And you can Google that too. That they've got some really neat stuff on just Google, like, say, can light ceiling, C or S E A L I N G, like you're going to airtight seal it.
All right, Mary Kay, thank you so much for your
call. Thanks.
Next up, Jim in Shell Rock. Hi, Jim. Hey, Jim, what's your question?
Hi.
Hi.
I installed a wood burning stove a year ago, and I got it in my basement. And I leave my furnace fan running to circulate the heat throughout the house.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering, with that fan running, will that draw air in from the outside, or should I leave a window open in the basement to let fresh air in?
Well, I would crack the window just, you know, a little bit because we don't know where the air – do you have air intake coming into the fireplace?
It's
or into the wood burner, I mean?
No, it's a freestanding wood stove.
Okay. Does it – on the back side of it, does it have a two-inch diameter, maybe a fitting where you can attach a stainless steel intake air pipe or anything on it? You may want to look at that. Oh, okay. Then I'd crack a window or positively bring in some air from outside. But, you know, kind of then you're bringing in cold air and you're trying to heat the house, kind of defeats the purpose.
If I'm running the furnace fan constantly, will that draw cold air in?
It depends on your house, on the pressure differences of your house, because that's supposed to be a closed system, your furnace. That's supposed to be balanced, so which means that the air that it's moving to the rooms, the same amount of cubic feet per minute's coming out. So that really doesn't have the effect unless the furnace wasn't installed where it was balanced. If you're going to do this, I would have your heating guy come over and have him test your furnace and make sure that you're not getting a positive or negative pressure in the house, which could cause an issue for you.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for your call. We'll get back to our conversation in just a moment. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here with me today. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and he's here to answer your questions. We've been talking a lot about fireplaces and heating and cooling, but any of your questions about your home, Bill can answer them, or at least try.
Well, we'll make some up.
866-780-9100, 866-780-9100, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we were just talking a few minutes ago about can lights.
Right.
And I guess Iowa Public Radio is full of cautionary tales today, but Dean Borg popped in to tell us about a very serious situation with can lights in his house. So tell us what the problem was.
Well, Dean said that he was going to bed one night. He looked up at one of the can lights and said it was still kind of glowing. And what had happened is somebody had come in and put insulation over the top of it. And so they called the fire department, and it had embers in it, and they'd, you know, had a fire starting in it, because those can lights, you know, that's why they have that special sticker for insulation contact. A lot of the cheaper ones aren't made to have anything against them. And in a lot of houses, we used a paper-faced type of fiberglass for a long time, and that laying over the top of it, and then you put in, you know, a low-efficiency, spotlight. You're just... there again, counting the days. We're real lucky you noticed that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. Matt is on the line next from Newton. Hi, Matt.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's your question?
I've got a large fireplace in a side room on my house, and I've been using it mainly to dispose of tree limbs. I got a bunch of oak and maple, and I got too many tree limbs this year. My question is there any harm in getting rid of some of my leaves in the same manner?
Yeah, you're going to get a lot of creosote buildup on that. And even the limbs, if they haven't been dried for at least a year, you're going to get a lot of creosote buildup inside of that flue. And I'd have somebody clean that flue out, like right now, if you've been using it at all, burning that kind of stuff. Yeah, leaves create a lot of gas. And also when they tend to kind of, oh, like cavitate and move around, and they have more of a tendency when they do start taking off, especially if they're a little bit dry, they kind of poof, and they may come out into the come into the room as well, and depends
well,
on
that'll leave you with a lot to clean up after.
Well, that and the other thing is too is it depends on what you have at the top. If you don't have a really good mesh at the top, you may have a lot of let's say Amber's going out the top, and I think your insurance person right now, if he was try to disguise your voice as best as you can and change your name next time, but I think your insurance person, you know what, they get really nervous about fireplaces anyway, but they really do if they hear like you're burning something other than just really nice, dry oak, you know, nice, good hardwood. They get nervous with pine. And you never burn treated or creosoted wood, like anything green treated. But I wouldn't burn any of the leaves. No, I'd do those in a barrel maybe out back or something or compost them.
All right, Matt, thanks a lot for your call. And Travis has a related question about what is the best wood to burn?
Well, you know, usually it's oak. Oak and ash, and I hate to say it, but, you know, we may have a lot of ash, you know, with the boar coming through. That, you know,
right. But don't transport it.
No, you don't. No. And, in fact, you know, and I'm glad you brought that up. Like up in Minnesota, you know, you have to have the stamp of where you got that wood and who supplied it and everything. You can't go from county to county up there because of the same thing. I'm glad you said that. But, you know, oak and walnut, you know, any of the hardwoods, pine, you know, we used to call that gopher wood. You put in one piece, you go for more. any of the good hardwoods. And, you know, elm is really good, but it's kind of hard to find. But, you know, I kind of have a problem a lot of times cutting up the bigger pieces because I always envision them as being boards and using them for timbers. And that's why I've got all these big logs in my back pasture. Now, they'll probably rot away before I use them, but I can't just get myself to cut them up and split them. But, yeah, if you can find some good oak and elm, that's where you're going to get a lot of good BTUs.
All right. Next up, Paul is in the Quad Cities. Hi, Paul.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
We had some insulation blown in earlier this year, and the workers improved the ventilation in the attic because there were some mold growing on the underneath side of the roof line. And I was wondering, so hopefully the ventilation's better where it doesn't produce more mold, but with the existing mold that's there, is there anything that I could spray on there to maybe eat away at the mold spores, or I was just wondering if I should just leave it or if there's something I can apply to it.
Well, it makes me a little nervous because there's a reason that mold was there. Mold needs moisture and it needs food. Well, the wood is the food, but there obviously was some moisture coming from inside the house. Maybe, you know, when you say the ventilation, I'm assuming, you know, the attic ventilation from the overhangs to the ridge.
Right. Okay. That's what they did. They did. They cut some holes in the overhangs and installed those little chutes because the roof line has the I'm not sure what it's called, but the very peak.
Sure, a ridge vent.
It has a ridge vent, but it did not have any holes cut in for the sides of the overhang.
Okay, so did they look at your bathroom vent? Is that vented outside?
That is working correctly.
Okay, that's not going into the overhang, is it?
No, that's actually going into the side of the house.
Okay.
Going out the side of the house, but we did have a little leaky roof earlier this spring, so moisture could have entered the attic that way.
Yeah, but that bathroom vent is the one that's scaring me. If it goes out the side, what they tend to do is then they go up. The air, warm air, goes up, and if there's any ventilation within about 7 feet either way, it's going to go right back into the attic again.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
In fact, on new homes, we're trying to get that out for information. Some of the training sessions is if you do run ventilation out the side or out the soffit, that you have to have unventilated soffits for roughly 7 feet either way. So there should be a 14-foot span where there's no attic ventilation.
Okay.
Because,
I'll check that.
Yeah, otherwise it goes right back up. And it depends on the age of the house. You may have any place where there's a wire coming up into the attic through the walls, warm air is coming up there.
Uh-huh.
You may have a range hood that's going into the attic because if there's mold, that's warm air coming from somewhere. It's very seldom actually a roof leak. It's usually warm air. And once you've eliminated the excess moisture, the mold is inert. I wouldn't even worry about it.
All right, Paul, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we've got Rock in Mount Vernon. Hi, Rock.
Hello.
Hi.
We just returned to Iowa from being outside of the state for about a little over 10 years, and our last stop off was East Texas. We're back to our first winter back in Iowa in a while.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be home. But we bought an old 1900 four square in Mount Vernon, and it's got a fireplace up the middle, the brick flue and chimney,
yep.
And it has a firebox in the living room. The previous owners cautioned us not to use it. We looked at it. We're not going to use it until we get it inspected. Do they have wood burning inserts? Would we need to run to an insert? Would we need to run a double wall metal flue up the middle of that brick, or can they use the existing brick if it's in good shape?
They would probably put a new flue up. If they're going to put a new one in, you'd want a new flue to for insurance and then safety wise. That would ensure a good positive flow of air out the flue. Your type of house is perfect for an insert. I mean, it really is, because once you put the insert in and you put a new flue in, then all that brick and everything else is just cosmetic.
Okay.
And that's what you want in an old four-score. You want it just to be cosmetic. And the other thing is hopefully this may eliminate some of the issue. Maybe I don't know if you have any of moisture and plaster degrading around it, like, say, on the second floor around the actual chimney.
Yeah, we haven't noticed any of that.
Okay.
Fortunately, the people we bought it from had done some good remodeling on it.
Okay.
In the late 80s. But what is that? They built an external garage, detached garage. What's some good products for doing garage heaters? Because it's cold out there already.
Yeah.
It's going to get colder.
Well, you're going to have to you're going to have to insulate it first.
It is insulated.
Okay.
It has a loft up top, but the inside, but the floor of the loft is plywood with insulation underneath. That the walls are insulated down in the main garage. It was a shop, but they don't. And he had a big old Potbelly stove that he took with.
Okay.
Him, so.
Well, I would look at a mini split heat pump. They're very efficient, because then you can also do cooling as well. I really like those. They're becoming very popular. The designs are just, it's just like a computer. They're just progressing so fast, but like, Fujitsu, or Mitsubishi, they're very good. I would look at that or a high efficiency, forced air gas. I would not use anything like those electric heaters, because I have one. And if you want to see a bill go up trying to heat your garage, actually my central vac does a better job, because I have the central vac unit sitting in the garage. And then so when I vacuum with the house, then all that warm air goes in the garage. But it smells like my dog then, so that's a downside. So that's why
pros and cons.
I would look at a mini split heat pump, because then you have heating and cooling.
All right, Rock, thanks a lot, and I hope you stay warm this winter. Sarah's on the line next in Cedar Falls.
I shouldn't have said that. I know. I'm in trouble.
Hi, Sarah.
Sorry, Sarah.
Hi. Hi. I'm calling with a question. I have a 1898 Victorian home here in Cedar Falls that has these two beautiful fireplaces with the big cast iron grates and all the things that were designed back then to make them blow smoky hot air into the house.
Yeah.
But I haven't touched them since we bought the house, because I don't even know where to begin. So I just wanted to get some advice on whether or not to try to, sort of make them usable, or if they're so old that, they need to be remodeled. The cast iron grates are beautiful, but I don't know.
But these grates are tied in with the fireplace?
Yeah, it's got that vented grate on the bottom, and then the cover was a big, heavy cast iron sort of lid face.
I've gotcha.
And then the frame is all ironed. And then it's got a flue that opens kind of like two slats.
Sure.
And then it still has all the original, goes down to the coal chute. We still have, the coal chute down there, and actually even still have the original boiler in the house.
Oh, that's
which
neat.
Is my second question. But I just wanted to know some advice on how to proceed with making them functional. There's two. And they're really beautiful, but I don't feel that they're safe.
I would get a chimney sweep person to come in, and I would have them start with that, because then they would look at the flue first, because if that whole flue situation is deteriorated, there may be so much cost in bringing that back up, even if you use the ceramic liner or something like that. It's you may just want to, it's good to look at, and let's just leave it at that. You could put an insert in it maybe, but I would start with the chimney sweep first.
All right.
Because they'll give you some good advice. A lot of times the chimney sweep isn't selling a product, which makes their opinion a little bit better. If you bring someone in that's selling something besides their, you know, the cleaning service, then you may get an opinion slanted one way or another. It's nice to have a, you know, somebody that's a little more third party, like somebody that actually cleans the flue.
All right, Sarah, thank you so much for your call. Kim is up next in Dubuque. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Hi.
I have two fireplaces, one in the basement and one on my main floor. And the basement was really bringing in a lot of cold air, so we put a gas insert in there, and it's working beautifully.
Okay.
However, upstairs, we can't use the one upstairs, and we don't want to. And we don't want to put a gas insert in there because, like you said, it gets so warm. I was wondering what I could do with that fireplace to seal it off or to keep the cold air from coming in there.
Well, they someone that works on like a sheet metal person, a heating and cooling person, they can order gasketing for the damper. And for the doors, and you may be able to actually get them from a door manufacturer, but you can get gasketing that will seal that damper off, and then the air won't be going up it anymore.
Okay.
On my mother's house, she didn't want to use that one anymore, and so now it's just decorative, and I removed the whole flue and everything.
Okay.
And insulated around it.
Do I go to the fireplace shop that I got the insert for the basement and ask them to do it? Who would you call?
Yeah,
for that?
If you like working with them, sure, because they might be able to get the gasketing materials and they may be able to put it in for you and seal the top one off.
Okay.
But the downside is though they're still going to have to seal the top of the flue off of the one you're not going to use so that nothing comes back down that pipe, because if it's a triple wall pipe, you could get something come down. And gas is actually, as they cool at the top, come down and get into your home. So they're going to have to seal the top of that flue as well and the one you're not going to use.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Kim. And so, Bill, we're out of time for questions. But just to reiterate, obviously you feel there are a lot of dangers associated with fireplaces of all kinds.
Yes, there is. And insurance people would probably agree with me. You know, if you're going to have one, you really do want to understand how to use it properly, when to use it, what kind of fuel, and some of the danger signs if you're not using it right.
All right. And again, the Chimney Safety Institute of America was the organization we were talking about earlier. And that website is csia.org. You can also find a link to the website on our Facebook page. Look for Iowa Public Radio. Bill McAnally, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me here.
Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert, comes by just about once a month to talk about home improvement questions. And now with me in the studio is Ben Kiefer. He's the host of River to River coming up today at noon. What's your plan for the day, Ben?
Hi, Charity. We've noticed a lot of the media looking back 50 years to the death of John Kennedy on November 22nd. And today we're going to be remembering that death by reaching out to some prominent Iowans who were alive at that time, who have a living memory of that national tragedy. We'll be talking with University of Iowa President Sally Mason, who was in middle school in New Jersey, Dave Lobsack, a 10-year-old in Sioux City, Jim Leach, a student at Princeton, Senator Charles Grassley, who was working in a business when he heard in Waterloo. Also, presidential historian Tim Walsh will share his remembrances as a boy growing up in a Catholic school in Detroit when that news struck. Also, our own Iowa Public Radio correspondent, Dean Borg, will be with us. Dean was, as he is now, working in the news business in 1963. But also more memorable than that, he'll share a story of actually running into then-Senator Jack Kennedy in 1958 at the National Corn Picking Contest here in Iowa.
Wow.
And not knowing who exactly Jack Kennedy was. That's how little known he was in 1958. So stay tuned at noon, remembering John Kennedy.
All right. You'll also be inviting listeners
Absolutely.
To join in on this
Absolutely.
Remembrances as well.
People who have a living memory of that day, please call in or send us an email. We'll be looking for you at noon.
I would guess anyone over the age of 6 at that time probably remembers exactly where they were and how they heard.
Absolutely. Very similar to 9/11.
Absolutely. Well, Ben, thank you so much. That's River to River coming up today at noon. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up tomorrow, it's Horticulture Day. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.